You mean to cut this off?
Doesn't matter. Any of it. This is an interview with Reverend Anderson Tatum, Jr. for the Youngstown State University Oral History Project on the racial tensions in Farrell, Pennsylvania during the 1960s by Ronald J. Rice at 122 North Main, is that right, in Wheatland, Pennsylvania, on July 3rd, 1981 at 4:50 in the afternoon. Okay, Reverend Tatum, can we begin by you telling us a little bit about where you're from originally?
I'm from Bay Spring, Mississippi. I'm born in Jasper County, Mississippi, 1934. And I stayed there until I was age 18 in Mississippi area. And then I came here at the age of 18 and got a job at Chenango Incorporated. And I've worked there since then. And that was in 52. And I've been there since then.
What do you remember most about your childhood?
There's so much. I remember quite a lot about it, even when I was very small, before I started school. There were some experiences that I remember. Where we lived, it was on a hill, like, and I remember my sister. She was a baby at that time. Both of us were babies, matter of fact. But I remember that, and people coming picking at me with her because I didn't want anybody to bother. I remember fighting with people, you know, in that way. I remember when I started school, what we call Do Funny book, you know, type of the primer we had, preschool. And I remember, you know, going with the other kids, going to school, and then not too long after that, I remember a house getting burned down.
Your family's house?
Yes.
Why was it? Was it arson or just accidentally?
Accidentally. Yes. And I was very small at that time. It was a double house, duplex, like. And some of my relatives were living on one side, we were living on the other. I'm not sure where the fire started, but I remember that, and then they rebuilt the house. And then we lived, the new house was just a small structure, and we lived there alone in that particular house until I guess I was about 5 years old. Then we moved across town, and that's where I started farming. I got a hold to plowing and what have I got into it with my father, of course. And then I remember going to school there. Then
went to high school there?
No. It was in the country, like, you know. So it was a country, little country school. I only went to about eighth grade, I think. But I didn't stay there that long. And then not too long after that, they built a high school in Bay Spring, which was a central location. Mm-hmm. And then all of the area schools, I mean, out in the various areas, then emerged into this one school and started bus transportation. And we started going to school together. And that was Bay Spring Vocational High School. And that's where I, you know, went to school there at from that point on.
What was high school like for you?
Well, it was interesting, but it wasn't as it would be now. You know, because at that time, I didn't really get into it. And, you know, because of farming and, you know, during that time, the parents would have the children stop schooling. They thought it was more important to be working than in school. So it made it very difficult. But I enjoyed, you know, going to school. It was a challenge. Sense, and I learned a lot, but it could have been much better if I would have been able to put my whole heart into it.
Well, you say you moved to Farrell or Wheatland?
Farrell.
Farrell when you were 18 years old, did you come with your family or did you come by yourself?
My father was here at the time. He was here and he worked a while. He did not move the family here, but he was here working and sending money back home, you know, there to support the family. Job, I mean, while not necessarily a job, but it paid much better here than there. And therefore, many of the people in that area left there and came here for that reason. And so that was why he was here. He stayed just temporarily here working and, you know, sending money back. Not too long after I'd come here, then he left and went home and stayed. So I was left here alone for a while, as far as my family.
Start on your own.
Right.
Well, what factors caused you to go into Shenango? Were they hiring at the time?
Yes, at the time they were hiring. My father did not work there. There were some people who I knew working there. But, you know, they would just hire you at that particular time. You could just go in and put an application, and they would pretty well hire you. You didn't need somebody to pull your pull the leg of the foreman or the administration to get someone in like it is now. So I had the application in several of the plants, and that was the one that called me first.
Okay. You've been here ever since?
Yes.
Well, what factors caused you to get involved with the church and go to theology school?
In 59, there was, number one, I was brought up in the church. I had a lot of faith in Christ, in the church. I thought it was, you know, the thing to do. But as a teenager, I somewhat drifted. I was not as committed to the church. I didn't do a lot of the things that the other young kids were doing, but nevertheless, I was not committed, you know. Then I got married in 56, and then in 59, one evening, late, I felt the Spirit of the Lord, really, upon me, and then this irresistible urge, which I tried to resist because, you know, I didn't think it was my bag as far as preaching was concerned. It wasn't what I wanted to do. And I had said to the Lord that I wouldn't. I said no, you know, flat no. But that urge continued to rest upon me, and I promised the Lord that night that if he would go with me, I would, you know, commit my life to preaching. And that was on a Saturday evening. I was working midnight. That was before I went to work. That 11 o'clock shift that evening. And that Monday, I told the pastor, church with this church was just the basement there, and I told him, and I told him my experience, and he said, well, that sounds like a call. So he gave me an opportunity to testify to the church and let the church know of my calling, and then he gave me an opportunity to preach. And so then after getting into it, I continued going to classes at various places. And it was after that I was called to pastor here that I went to Youngstown, while it was American Baptist Theological Seminary Extension in Youngstown, where I went. And I went 5 years there going, I went more than that because one year I had to drop out because of my work schedule. They had me work an afternoon turn. There was no way I could get it changed. So then the next year I continued. I went 3 years and got a certificate in Christian training. Then I finished the 5 years and got the diploma in theology. So that's the way that worked out.
Great. Well, what are some of your chief interests besides work in the church?
Well, right now, it's a beautiful challenge that I have because I'm serving on city council. And right now, it's one of my, chief interests is that I can bring more unity to the city of Farrell, to the city administration. There is somewhat of division in the city administration in which, maybe I'm looking at it in the spiritual sense, and maybe I'm looking at it in a sense that I believe that, it can be accomplished, and it might be that others might be saying it'll never happen. But I do believe that politics is people doing things for people, not necessarily what, others are saying about it. And then for us to do many things for the people, we need to get together ourselves and work together to get that accomplished. Because it's a great challenge, a great task. City administration now is something, because of the overall administration of the federal administration. So that right now, that is one of the things that is foremost on my mind, aside from the church. And I do believe that I would be able to accomplish a lot in that area. Whether I do all that I would want to do, I haven't done it all here yet. But I do believe that I will accomplish a lot in that area, as far as city administration.
How long have you been on the city council?
Since March.
Oh, just recently. Congratulations.
Yeah. Thank you. I was appointed. Mr. Herbert Williams, who serves on council, he was a black man, and he passed. And then I was asked to accept the appointment. And I again tried to refuse because of the schedule I already have, but they kept on and I accepted that. And then they asked me to run, to be elected, because this term would only be just the rest of this year. So I ran in the primaries and I was elected. There was 8 of us who ran for 4 positions, and I got one of them. I tied for 3rd place with John Palko.
Well, if we could go back to the 1960s now, what was an average day like for you then? Probably working an 8-hour day.
Yes, at that time I was working. Also, I was pastoring. I did some marches. We marched various places here in our area.
Protest marches?
Well, I wouldn't say, I would call them more or less awareness, to bring the awareness of our situation to the public. And in support of the racial tension that was going on, all around our country. Number one, we marched in Farrell. We marched there more than once, but this one particular time, we marched, they were getting ready to appoint a school board member. And the NAACP was involved in the march. So we marched up at Farrell City High School. We marched up to the school and then we picketed, in a way of speaking, in front of the school while they were having a board meeting. And because we felt that, we believed very strongly that there should have been at that particular time a black appointed to the school board. We did not succeed at that particular time, but
there were no blacks on the school board.
No. I'm not thinking very clearly on it, but I think Toby Jackson was finally I believe he was appointed, I'm not sure, and then he was elected in succession, maybe two or three times afterward. So he is serving on the school board right now. We had another march in support of the marches that were going on around our country. We marched down Sharon. I'm not sure, I think this was in support of the march in Selma, Alabama, I believe, the same thing. And several of us marched down Sharon. And that was one of the marches that we were involved in. Then the other things that as far as I'm concerned, were very sad was when the burning taking place in Fairfax, which had happened at night. Weren't too many, didn't too many know about it, those right. who had gone to bed. But then the next day, and all of the looting and whatnot. And it was quite a very tense moment that we went through because we didn't know what would happen next. And it was a very dangerous time, and it was a very scary time in a sense because we were aware of what was happening in Detroit. It was a very sad time in Detroit, and also in Watts, California. So it was just someone who were trying to, I guess, show that they could do the same thing, but it only hurt us, really. But yet this was a way that people had in letting off their frustration and their tension.
Well, during the 60s, could you sense any growing racial tension in Farrell?
Yes, very much so. It was very dangerous because the whites were getting prepared with guns and what have you, and they were talking about what they were going to do as well as the blacks and what they were doing. The blacks were, matter of fact, there was a group there in Farrell who had had ammunition and all kinds of ammunition.
A group of whites?
No, blacks. But the whites, I don't think that they had a group as such. But they were just talking about, they were preparing themselves because they didn't know what was going to happen, which I can understand very well. They didn't, because even we didn't. We pleaded to various people that, this was not the way, but it didn't do any good. You know, they were after getting some blood, whatever way they could get it. And
was it an organized group that had ammunition, or was it just a...
It was an organized group. I don't remember the name of it now.
It wasn't the Black Youth Action Committee.
I believe so, but it was another name also.
They have a cultural center?
Wasn't it Black Cultural Center?
Cultural Center, yeah. I think they went by the title of the Black Youth Action Committee.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that's the group on Staunton. Okay, well, you heard about it.
Yes, I talked to several members, Billy Samuels and Roger Winston, and several members of the group.
Did they tell you they had various ammunition in there?
They, roundabout way that they were armed, but they were...
Yeah, they had ammunition, which I didn't see the ammunition, but this is what they were, it was said. And they were very radical at that time, which now, those two especially whom you have mentioned are very much different than they were at that particular time.
They even remarked about how they've changed themselves.
Yeah.
Well, do you think the violence in Farrell was sort of a domino effect throughout the country that some people feel it was happening in other cities, it was bound to happen in Farrell?
Yes, in a way of speaking, because of the prejudice and the discrimination that goes on. And you know, it's still quite a discrimination, inferred in various ways. It's more graduated discrimination or educated or sophisticated discrimination now, more so than just, you know, out point blank. It's, right. You know, more elevated.
Being from the South, some people from the South have told me that discrimination in the South was right out in the open, where discrimination in the North is hidden.
Right.
And it's worse up here than it is down there.
Well, I guess the way people look at it might seem worse, but, you know, I think it's just all over, but they had a sneaky way of doing it here. And there, you know, you would see a sign up there, you know, they had a water fountain, you didn't drink, you know. You know, they just said it would be up there white, they didn't play, see. And they would have, you know, like restaurants you didn't go in. And, you know, those kind of things. When you're on the bus, you catch the bus here, you get to Cincinnati, that same bus, when you get to Cincinnati, they put a sign up. And then, you know, and this isn't something that I heard about. You know, I, from, you know, transporting.
Experience.
Time, right. And, so, you know, this would be different down there. Yeah.
Well, when the violence and racial tension in Farrell, was your life or any of your family's lives ever affected by any violence or direct racial tension, say at work or school?
No.
How about in your neighborhood?
No, I can't say that there were any incidents that were a direct result of the racial tension.
Any organizations or clubs?
No.
How about any of your friends ever remarked to you about being affected some way by?
Yes, in the school, that others have talked about it, how it has been in the school. There is a thing that I've noticed in the school, in Farrell School. Blacks are not involved in the school as far as the teaching administration and so forth. And then when it come out with that class recognition and all of this, you don't see the blacks, and you know, it's just like lily white, you know, all the way through. I have commented about that. I've talked with Mr. Russell Phillips. He's the I believe principal at the middle school. He's black. And I talked with him about it some time ago, about how I look at it. And this is a thing that can ignite, you know, a racial violence. Not that it's a thing that, you know, worthwhile doing, but people want to retaliate, and then, you know, they will utilize this just to do that. He said he had talked with Mr. Morocco about it, but to no avail. He didn't get any consideration of, you know, letting this, I mean, doing something about it. So, you know, it's just a matter of, it's there. It's there, and, you
still
know,
today.
It's there today.
Can you recall anything about some of the burning and damage that was done to some of the buildings on Hamilton and in that area?
On Hamilton?
I mean, Idaho.
Okay. Well, as of right now, you know, it seems vague, but then there are on several buildings were damaged windows shattered. On Idaho, some of the buildings are gone now. They've torn them down. Some of them were patched up, fixed up. One building there now on the corner of Idaho and Spearman is still there. It's like boarded up out front. So that's it has been torn down. I believe the drugstore on the corner of of Wallace in Idaho. I believe that building was damaged too, but now it's down. That's the one across the street on the north side of Idaho. I'm not sure the one on the south side of Idaho. I'm not sure that it was damaged at that time.
Well, would you label what happened in Farrell during the summer of 1969 and most of Onset? Would you label it a riot?
No, not really. I haven't studied the definition of riot, but I would think a riot would be when people would get together and they would be warring against each other, and it was not that. I would say that the blacks were taking out their frustration on the administration. Well, not necessarily the administration, but on the merchants, the buildings that were there in Philadelphia, more so than rioting against anybody.
Can you recall anything more about the Black Youth Action Committee? Just maybe what their demands were to the city, or some things that they had done?
No, not really. I had talked with some of them at various times, and you know, they had mentioned some of the, you know, their demands, but, you know, I didn't keep that in mind.
Well, how do you think the Sharon Herald reported the events in Farrell during the 60s?
Well, it might be because of my feeling toward the Sharon Herald. They paint a dirty picture of Farrell in time to get a change. And I think they would exaggerate any time they got a chance to report something. If a couple windows get broken out, you know, when they get through, it's about 20 homes destroyed. And this is the way Sharon Herald has done Farrell. And not only that, but then they want to sell news, and so they got to make it interesting. And it just seems to be that Farrell has been the victim more so than any other area where this happened.
I think their reports might have added to the problems, the racial problems in Farrell.
Yes, I do believe that, you know, because when people are tense, involved in racial tension, and you know, words can only add fuel to the fire, and I do believe that that it added in its own time to that.
How do you how did the Farrell police deal with all the racial problems?
I would say, under the circumstance, I feel that they dealt very well with it, under the circumstance, because at that particular time, I don't think that our police department was trained for this type of thing. And it happened, you know, at a time that they just had to deal with it as it had come up. And I would say that they deal with it fairly, you know, under the circumstances.
Well, getting towards the city government now, how do you think the city government handled the situation? They dealt with the racial problems and some of the violence.
I think they dealt with it, I would say, under the same circumstances, fairly, I would say. I wasn't into administration, you know, and watching every monitoring had removed at that particular time, but we were able to get through it without it spreading, and the police department, the city administration, they were able to deal with it in such a way that they didn't let it get out of hand, and so. People don't really know until they get into it. Sometimes you can stand off on the side and you can point fingers, but they did this without it, you know, exploding, and it could have happened. A small place like this, and with the people, and with the policemen and what have you, have not been trained for this kind of thing. So I would say they dealt with it fairly.
Since Farrell, most of Farrell's population seems to be blacks concentrated in certain areas, Italians, whatever. how do you feel about the election system for electing council? The at-large election.
No, I believe that it would be better so that the blacks or the various area would always have someone represent, that they would have a, that they would go by
wards.
Wards are, yeah, I believe wards. And that way you would have someone from all segments of the community represented on council. You won't have them all from up on the hill. And then when they get pressure, they will, you know, work from the hill rather than, you know, from all areas. But if you have people represented from all areas, they're going to concentrate a lot of effort to the area in which they're serving.
Right.
And therefore, all of the segments of the community will be represented and they will get their fair share.
I find it odd that most people feel that way, but it's never been changed in Carroll.
Right, okay. And as far as I'm concerned, it's a very prejudiced reason that it was not. When they started studying the Home Rule Charter, they were meeting they had several meetings. All right, this was brought up. I went to a couple of those meetings, and it was brought up in that light that, you know, and it wouldn't necessarily be black from a black area. But it would be a person from that area, and that person would be responsible for speaking for that particular area. Because, you know, when the election come, if they want to be reelected, they would serve that area. And they would do what they could in that light. But point blank, we would have our meetings, mostly black attended those meetings. We'd have our meeting, they claimed they wanted the input. We put the input in that. Then when they leave and come back, they said, we're not going to do it. And they said, well, what do you mean you're not going to? Well, and they came out boldly and said it. Said, well, when we leave here and go to the Golden Dog, and go to the bowling lanes and the barbershop, that they are telling us different. I said, well, you have public meetings. If they got anything to say, they ought to come to the meeting. Yeah, but they don't come to the meeting. And they told us that they had to do what they said. And if this weren't prejudice, what was it?
Yeah, sounds like a cop-out.
Right. So, but I never would have mentioned it. Me doing that, I never would have mentioned it. But they were bold enough to say why they weren't going to do it. Because those others out there telling them not to, and they did what those said, and they didn't even it didn't even come up to give the voters a chance to even vote it up or down.
Yeah. I just find it ironic that it's never put nothing to
that. Well, that's why.
Yeah. Well, as a reverend at the time or a person, were you ever asked to become part of a group or movement which tried to better race relations in Carroll?
Yeah. We had a ministerial association. We were working at that particular time. We were asked to work with the police department, ride with the cruisers. And this, I believe, worked out fairly well. I never, you know, got a chance to do so at the time that I was to ride with them. Some of the other ministers rode in my place. And I think that brought about quite a better relationship by the cops having a minister riding with them when they were on duty, and especially when they would get calls and whatnot, and they would be right there. And naturally, the cop is going to put his best foot forward, and then many times the victim who is to be arrested or what have you, most of the time, they're going to respect the minister. And during that time, I do believe that it brought about quite a better relationship, you know, all the way around. And this was good. We have had ministers set up that people cheering who had problems, they would be brought in, and we would counsel with them, even with the cops. We have talked with cops and their behavior, you know, and this kind of thing to help to keep down racial outbursts. And this has helped a lot, because there has been several times, even since then, that it came very close to exploding. And matter of fact, one of the reasons that they wanted, you know, a black on council, because they saw what could possibly be ahead. And so therefore they wanted, and I think they moved wisely to look that far and help in any area that they can to keep racial tension from exploding.
Can you recall any specific examples of racial prejudice in the Farrell, such as in real estate or economic jobs or social? Think there was any redlining in Farrell of who could buy homes where? I think I asked you, do you know if any redlining went on in Farrell, like only certain people could buy houses, say, up on a hill?
Why, yes, that's been for years, you know. It wouldn't be like out in the open, but it would be that some reason, you know you didn't get funded, or, I mean, the loan didn't go through, or whatever, when it came to certain areas in Farrell. It's better now, but it's still there.
And, still goes on today.
Right. It's still there. For instance, I live on 310 Hamilton. So when I called a guy on the phone. I talked with him about the lot. I saw the lot for sale. I called him on the telephone. I talked with him about the lot. He had paid $600 and something for the lot. He's a real estate guy. Lace Realty. And we talked on the phone, and he said, yes, and I want to get rid of the lot. I'll let you have it for cost. He just went on and on and on. Okay, I go down, talk to him. When I went down, I started checking on that lot. He said, oh, you're the guy talking about the lot, you know, just like that. I said, yes. I said, I'm the guy to call you about the lot. So, but he lied all kind of ways. So he says, then he started, let me see. They want to charge me $1,200-something for the lot. I says, you told me on the phone that you would sell it to me at cost, even for $600-something. No, you must talk with somebody else. If he knew, I mean, if it was someone else, how did he know that I was the one talking about the lot? And so they kept saying that, but it was no, he didn't have anyone else in the office. He was the only one in the office. And so we talked and talked, and so then he found out I was a minister afterward. And then he told me that I would have the money to buy the office. I said, money's no problem. I said, as a matter of fact, you told me that you were going to sell me the lot for one thing, and now you're saying for another. So we bickered over for a while. Then I ended up paying him $800-something for the lot. When I cleaned it off, started the bill, in that area where I'm at, it was all white. They started looking. They were looking as if they really hated it. So then I started building. But I think this was just kids having fun. They would tear down my brick, my window, you know, put up for my basement, tear them in, and things like that. Those kind of things I went through as far as racial, you know, tension. If it would have been up on the hill, I probably wouldn't have gotten it built. So, you know, this is just how it is.
What do you think any single group was responsible for all the violence that happened in Farrell? Some people think that people were bused in from other cities and causes trouble.
I don't know about being bused in, but there were some people who were caught who were from other areas who were involved in So I do believe that much of it stimulated from people outside. Yes, I do believe that.
Do you think more recreation facilities in the city could have possibly prevented some of the violence that happened? Maybe kept the youth more active? Some people think it was a hot summer and there's nothing to do, so the problem was there. Let's just take off.
I don't say that I believe recreation would have done it. Because you're going to get a certain amount of people going to do it now. They tear up recreation material, equipment, rather. So I think it was a thing that was in the atmosphere, and it was going around the country, and they, you know, some saw an opportunity to cash in on it. And because of the racial problem that we already had here, they had a seed bed to start from. And then they started from that, and it got going.
I think the problems Farrell had then were inevitable.
Just about it. I think the city administration could have prevented probably much of it had they been aware of it and then had some knowledge of these things, knowing why they come about, and then began to work on that before it came. And I don't say that, you know, the city administration should bow, and this is a thing that I did not believe, that the city administration should bow to the whims of the people, because the city administration needs to protect me and you as well. They did, you know, bow to some of their wishes that I did not agree with, but I don't say that, you know, it was just going to be, because I think it could have been prevented had they, had everybody would have been fair across the board, and then that reason wouldn't have been there. This is the way I feel about it.
Well, having the advantage of looking back some over 10 years now, what changes would you like to have seen instituted in the city? Perhaps
then or now?
Then. Or maybe, or would they be the same now?
Yes, because it had not moved too far from that. Now, as far as jobs, which, you know, I think this is the thing that we're going to have, because I think if blacks were in the administration, I think they're going to favor blacks. And now that whites are in the administration, they're going to favor whites. Okay. Then when this is done, naturally it's going to give the other one a chance to say, well, see, I'm discriminated against. And that's going to lay there. And then when that person is unable to get various things that other people get, like from jobs and whatnot, that's lying there. It may never explode, but then there's a possibility that it can explode at any time. And this is the thing that is happening. Even right now, there are people who would like to really get things going now, but by not getting help, you know, a person can't do very much alone. And unless they got a lot of nerve and just go out and start doing things, you know, but people don't want to do that. They want to work in a group, a crowd. And so therefore, I think these things ought to be done in the businesses around Farrell, around our area. Hiring is, you know, is one of the practices that people use to discriminate against. It is happening there where I'm working at now. We have talked to the administration there, personnel, and it has been that they would, you know, lie backwards and forward. And so this is the thing that it's still in our area, and it's a dangerous thing.
Excuse me, I'm gonna... Well, overall, then, would you say race relations aren't much better in Farrell today compared to what they were in the 60s? Or do you think there's a possibility that things could become fair and even out?
Yes, I think it's a possibility. You know, as one could believe in the Lord, it's the only thing that's possible for those who believe. And I do believe that it can be. And it's going to take a lot of involvement by people of all sides. And if those who are in authority are in a position to do something about it, their hearts could be softened to the point where they would say, let's be fair. I do believe that it could be curved, but getting that person to admit to himself and to others that I've been wrong, I'm not going to do it this way, we're going to do it fairly. When people are not pressured, and this is the thing, that this is what caused a lot of it. Sometimes it's not so much the person who is in authority or in the administration, but it's being pressured from the outside. And naturally, they're going to say, well, you know, I'm going to lean this way. And naturally, if you lean this way, you're going to lean against this guy. And so this is the situation. And unless the person up there be willing to take the medicine and go right down the road, we're going to have the racial tension, and when you got racial tension, it's a possibility that it's flaring up at any time.
So there is a real possibility that it could happen again.
Yes. Matter of fact, when I was asked to accept the appointment as city council, they mentioned that. Mr. Nash mentioned it to me. That if they didn't have a black representation on council, there could be a racial explosion in Farrell. He told me that. So he was aware of it. Whether he was doing that to persuade me to accept it or not, I don't know. It didn't work anyhow because I didn't accept it until the death of Herbert. And they believed that Herbie would lose the election. And therefore they wanted me to believe that I wouldn't. And they wanted me to run so that the black would have representation there. So if you don't, we got a problem on our hands. So he had been in administration here for some time. So therefore, if anyone would know about it, he ought to. Because see, he is the boss of the city. He is the city manager. He's the boss of the city, so he's over all the departments. He would like to have a hand on the pulse of the city, and he should know what he'd be talking about.
Well, how do you feel Farrell's past racial problems has affected the reputation of the city overall in the Shenango Valley?
I don't think it has bothered in that sense that much. The thing of it is, we have the racial prejudice all around. So if the spotlight can be on Farrell, then it's not on the other municipality. And therefore, they are laughing. They're saying, well, I'd rather you than me, you know. And they want everything focused on that particular thing. And when that happens, they get by. And Farrell is this victim. So this is where I see it.
Or is there anything else important you would like to discuss that we didn't cover?
Well, I would guess not, because I'm not into that kind of thing. So like by working, I don't keep up with what's going on that much, which I'll be doing more of it now that I've been involved as I am. But
okay. Well, thank you.
You're welcome.